Weekend Warrior is on the air with Dr. Robert Clapper, board-certified orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai Health Associates, and Coach Dave Meller, the Weekend Warrior, every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Dedicated to you, the fan who works hard all week and slugs it out on the court, the field, the big box store, and the honey-do list all weekend long. This is the show dedicated to your health, your life, your sports, and helping you cope as you come to the realization you're not 19 any longer. Here's Coach Dave Meller and board-certified orthopedic surgeon Dr. Robert Clapper. Warriors, come out to
play. And welcome back to the Weekend Warriors Show on LA Sports Leader 710 ESPN. It's Dave and the Doc, and if you're just tuning in, this is the show for you, the Weekend Warrior. And we like to take every Saturday morning, and we put you first. We look at your health, your wellness. We're practical. We're passionate. The doc tries to be funny, but I've got a cure for that coming up. A quick recap of our first hour. We've talked about change, and it wasn't that money in your pocket. Did the Lakers snub Kobe in the decision process? We've taken your calls, and we've heard from you, the Weekend Warrior. And joining us now, an entertainer who for over three decades has put smiles on our faces and aches in our bellies. He's been nominated for countless Emmys, an iconic comedian, a man who paved the way, in my opinion, for Seinfeld and The Office. He's a boxer. He's a Buddhist. And you know what, Doc?
What?
The best thing about him, he's a basketball junkie.
That's right.
The great Gary Shandling joins the Weekend Warrior Show. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, ladies.
That's great.
You're not fooling me.
We're both wearing dresses here, Gary.
Oh, tell me something I don't know.
Great. Now we're on TV, and
I'm afraid every time Doc puts me to sleep. You know, Doc Clapper did both of my knees. He redid the,
The meniscus.
Right?
Yeah, the meniscus, yes.
Well, talking about your knees, I want to get right into this because I was reading up that you're quite the boxer. And I wanted to ask you, Gary, what is similar between being a boxer and a stand-up comedian?
Well, there actually is a similarity. I could be funny about it and say I should be wearing a headgear for both. But actually, the idea of punching and getting punched and making it all one is really the same as going on stage and delivering the jokes, and some work and some don't, and you adjust and move very quickly. So there was a phase when I was first started boxing, which is about 10 years ago, where you could actually see it affect my movement on stage, because I was working out in the gym every day, and my body movement actually became a little different. I was bobbing and weaving a bit, and I think it was when I was hosting the Emmys in like 2005, and they were having a little trouble keeping the camera on me. So I knew my boxing was coming along, but they didn't know what I was doing on stage.
This is the Weekend Warrior Show on LA Sports Leader 710 ESPN. Joining us, the great Gary Shandling.
Gary, one of my favorite quotes of all times is Mike Tyson's quote. And he said, "It's great in life to have a game plan until someone punches you in the mouth."
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess there are many metaphors for biting somebody back in the ear,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
The ear is sort of...
But I love that. You can make all these preparations. Men make plans and God laughs. And until someone punches in your mouth, all the plans go up in smoke. It's fantastic.
Hey, Gary, before we get into your activities as a Weekend Warrior, I want to ask you, who had the most influence on your career as a comedian?
Well, way back, it would be Woody Allen and George Carlin, who, of course, George was a great, great stand-up comic. And Woody Allen did the movies and... I think Woody Allen goes. Doesn't he always show up at the basketball games in New York? Or he sometimes does, I think.
Yeah, he actually does. He's a big bet. So maybe there's something about basketball. Maybe, Coach, you can get connected to this conversation now about comedy and basketball.
Well, Gary, I've got to tell you, I've got the chance to see the great George Carlin before he passed. Just down from my place in Manhattan Beach, he was in Hermosa Beach at a comedy club there that I love. And you know what? This is a PG-rated show, so we're not going to talk about those seven words that you cannot say on TV. But let me ask you this. Well, you know what? I'm going to let Doc ask you about your being a basketball fanatic because, again, that's my life. Go ahead, Doc.
So on Sundays, without revealing too much, you have a basketball game at your house. And you have lots of folks that come from the entertainment industry to play basketball. I happen to know this because I usually get a phone call on Monday because somebody has now injured themselves.
Yes, Doc. Robert said. Robert said to me, "So many guys. He's worked on so many guys in my Sunday game that he said he would like to come down and watch the game which is on a court here at my house and sit right behind the bench like the Laker doctor because he has worked on so many of the guys.
Oh yeah,
to come down. He's never been down and actually watched a game.
I have to come and watch.
Well, Gary, would you be opposed to having Doc and I do a remote and we come down there and have our Weekend Warrior show on the court? We'll bring no paparazzi.
Well, I mean. Let me think about that. You may want to.
We may want to rethink that request.
Well, you know,
you may want to get to shoot mostly the cheerleaders. We'll see.
Well, hey, it's Hollywood. The great thing about your buddy, the doctor, that is probably my famous doctor in the world. He's not really getting this radio stuff. And Gary, you being an iconic person in comedy, and you've been a guru to all the writers. I like it how he says, "I want to talk about your Sunday basketball games without being too revealing." The heck would be in revealing? I want to know who's got game. What famous movie stars or entertainers or comedians come to your place and they got game?
Yeah, well, there's one fellow, Dave Duchovny, who played at, I believe, Princeton his freshman year.
Oh, wow.
And he's really smooth on the court. Dave's a real athlete. And
I hear he's a real player, too, off the court. Is there any truth to that?
And if I may continue, Dave?
Yes. Good for you, Gary.
We get the anesthesia ready, Doc. We may have to give some to Dave.
Please, exactly. Our remote is going to be from the operating room, and he's going to have an IV in his arm.
You know, when Robert did both of my knees about a year apart, is that typical, by the way, Robert, that if one knee is starting to tear from, let's call it wear for the moment, and people want to know how old I am, I'm older than Brett Favre, and let's leave it at that.
It is pretty common, actually, to end up with you've torn your rotator cuff in one shoulder. There will be some changes. Things are not exactly at the same pace, although I see that as well, but it is very common. If you've hurt one knee or one ankle, one shoulder, one hip, that sooner or later you're going to probably end up with the other one being done, yes. Which is depressing, but I didn't create the system. I'm just working here.
Nice try.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the Weekend Warrior Show on LA Sports Leader 710 ESPN. Joining us, the great Gary Shandling. Gary, we talked about who had an influence on you early on. Who right now currently are comedians that you enjoy listening to and you think are at the top of their field?
Well, you know, I don't know if he would be labeled as a comedian or not, but Sacha Baron Cohen, who does those great movies and was Ali G, he's British, and he's a friend of mine. And he plays in the game, and he would probably win most improved player. He's quite good. And
well, I just have to tell the listeners one funny thing. Right before Gary's having his other knee done, as we're wheeling him into the operating room, he looks at me and goes, "Robert, I have one more question for you, one more thing to say to you." I said, "What?" Because I could tell he's nervous. I said, "Relax, everything's going to be fine, just like the other side." He goes, "No, the last time I was in the hospital, they shaved me everywhere, and I was just visiting."
That's totally right, and I was just visiting a friend of mine.
Well, Gary, before we let you go, I know that you are a hoops junkie, and you, I should ask you, number one, are the Lakers your favorite team? And second question, if they are, what do they need to do to make it a better ending next season?
Well, let me first say I have the same shrink as Ron Artest. I'm kind of proud of that, and I'm there for the same reason, which is Kobe wouldn't throw me the ball a year ago. Even when I'd be on a floor seat, and he would run by during the game, and I'd yell, throw me the ball, and he would not, and that sent me into therapy.
Well, there's four other guys that have that same problem
exactly.
At times.
But, I thought this year was a real lesson in something about continuing to grow, and you see these younger athletes just getting are just faster. Wouldn't you say both of you would say that they're just getting faster, stronger, more committed, and there's a sense in general of effort. We used to say, I like watching the Final Four because the college kids are just playing so hard. I'm starting to see it in the NBA in these playoff games, wouldn't you say?
I think that what happened this season is exactly what happens in many people's lives and careers.
Uh-huh.
They get burnt out. I think, going 4 years in a row to the finals obviously has taken a toll on everyone but Kobe, I would say. And I think you are tremendous inspiration to many of us because the ability to say that you're doing what you do, Gary Shandling, for three decades now, it speaks to your drive and your not burning out type of thing. And it's inspiring to all of us who don't do comedy, who are surgeons, who are lawyers, or whatever it is. So hats off to you. How do you get motivated to stay?
Well, I was going
to
say, let me include that it was Duchovny who said to me about 10 years ago, because he was boxing, I think, a couple years ahead of me in this particular place. And he said, you got to come in here because it'll really put you in a new uncomfortable zone, and test you. And so that constant testing, which of course can be dangerous in sports, getting to that edge, is something that I need to do in my career and probably we all need to do. And once you lose that edge that you're really trying to overcome this part, as opposed to being kind of, Robert, you're saying a little bored, a little laid back,
right,
a little not.
So it keeps you on your edge. So you keep wanting to learn. You keep wanting to challenge yourself. That's how you stay on your game, with the added benefit that the more you do whatever it is that you're doing, you get better at it. You get a sixth sense, that Malcolm Gladwell thing. Do it 10,000 times. That's the difference between good and greatness. So I think the message is no matter what you're in, whatever you do for a living, you better be enjoying it, but stay on your edge. Keep challenging yourself. I think you're totally right. And sports has really done it for you with your boxing.
Yeah, I have a great boxing coach. And I want to give a shout-out to Dave Fabrizio, who is my physical therapist, and we always argue with Robert because Dave Fabrizio always believes in using a little extra weight in rehab, and Doc kind of says swim.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Right.
We know Doc comes in here every morning with his goggles on and his snorkel.
I was going to say I did both. I swam with weights, and that did not work out.
That's when the lifeguard jumped in the pool. Well, listen, we really appreciate you taking the time. Well, a very interesting guest to Robert and I and all of the world, just somebody who has brought so much laughter to us. We appreciate you for coming on the Weekend Warrior
Show. Gary, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll be in touch. And thank God you've run out of knees for me to operate on.
Hey, who's the comedian?
Exactly.
And this is the Weekend Warrior Show on LA Sports Leader 710 ESPN.
Thanks,
coming
Gary.
Up next, your reactions and your calls. 877-710-ESPN. 877-377-776. I think I gave you one too many sevens, but that's okay. It's your lucky day. We'll be right back.
This is a shock. Let's go to Mark from Canner's Deli. Mark, thanks for calling in.
How you doing?
Do you actually, are you related to the owners of Cantor's Deli?
Yeah, I'm third generation. My grandfather was the founder. And
right.
We're actually at fourth generation. My son and my cousins are involved. So,
were you there when Obama came?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, my God. Did he eat at the deli?
He did. What happened was he was just supposed to have coffee and tea and some arugula. And it was a meeting to meet some people that wrote in questions. And he actually wanted to eat, off the menu. But he had a lunch to go to, an hour later with some ambassador or something. And so they said he would only be eating light. But, of course, my brother Gary snuck him a pastrami sandwich. And he took it to go. He said he'd eat it later.
That's because his doctor gave him a prescription that said one pastrami sandwich would make him feel better. He'll solve world peace, Mark Canner, with a Cantor's pastrami sandwich.
No matter what the doctor says, you can still have a pastrami sandwich.
Can I ask you a question so that I can tell my wife, who I hope is not listening?
Sure.
The ceiling in the dining room is one of the greatest ceilings of any dining room I've ever been in. Believe me, the White House doesn't have a ceiling this fantastic to eat under than the ceiling in the Cantor's Deli, because it looks like you're in a forest where the leaves are changing, right?
Right.
Is it plastic or is it stained glass?
Well, okay, I hate to break it to you, but it's acrylic.
Damn!
Your wife is on the line, Doc. Your wife is on the line.
Let me tell you something.
It was put in 1983. If it would have been put in back in the 50s, it probably would have been stained glass.
Okay. You know what? You're such an honest man. We love you, Mark, and I love your deli, and I love the kreplach, and the chicken broth is... I eat chicken soup at all the delis, and I don't need to name all of them. Everybody knows from Art's and Brent's and Jerry's, and yours is the most flavorful chicken soup I've had in Los Angeles.
Well, we make it with love.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, do you have an orthopedic problem I can help you with?
I do.
Good. I'm trading you an orthopedic exam for a pastrami sandwich. This is how life should be. This will be the new HMO.
Well, let me ask you a question real quick. You like a pastrami sandwich, or you like the Reuben?
Oh, I love the Reuben. Are you kidding? Are you kidding?
You know, the pastrami sandwich has its own right, but the Reuben, it takes you to another level.
It does.
Oh, your eyes God. Will spin like a...
You know what? And I'll tell you what's also great. Your coleslaw. It's an art form to make coleslaw properly. You have the creaminess, you have the vinegar, you have the sugar in it, you have the right amount of carrots in it, and it's been marinating for a while. There's something special about your coleslaw.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. But you know, anyway, so back to my shoulder.
Back to your shoulder. Okay, I'm getting a free sandwich. You can now have your shoulder evaluated. Go ahead.
Somebody actually literally bumped into me while they were walking and kind of tore my shoulder about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And right away I knew that it was a problem because it hurt really bad instantly. Mm-hmm. But I figured, okay, we'll see what happens in a couple weeks. It might go away. In the end, it didn't go away. And
question, Mark. Mark, do you have diabetes?
No.
Because people with diabetes get frozen shoulders that are really tough to treat. So that's a good news. Okay, keep going.
So anyways, I went for an MRI, and it showed that I had a little tear in there.
Good.
And then they said it would heal. There's really nothing you can do surgically.
They sent you to therapy.
But they made a mistake. Yeah, they did send me to therapy, but I made a mistake by getting the cortisone shot.
Oh!
And I know this because it wasn't the cortisone that got me. It was the needle passing through to get to the through the muscle to get to the shoulder, which actually did more damage than the to my, because then it hurt worse.
Right.
And the doctor said it's going to hurt for about a week, but it hurt worse for, you know, like 3 more months.
Correct.
So eventually physical therapy, and they were trying to strengthen it and do some things. But for whatever reason, I ended up getting frozen shoulder. I guess that I wasn't using it because my body was protecting it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to therapy for the frozen shoulder, and I'm doing some working out at home with a 2-pound weight a little bit and moving it and stretching it. I'm getting more movement now.
Good. Good.
With that goniometer or whatever they use, I can get to, after a good stretch, I can get to 145 on it. So I guess you're supposed to get to 180.
You're right. Well, this is what you're supposed to get to, your other shoulder. Just look in the mirror. That's the goal. You want to duplicate what you have on the good shoulder.
So, but I'm not really taking Advil or anything, which I don't know. So I don't really know.
So let me give you some advice. You ready?
Yeah.
Being Jewish, you're incapable of putting a pulley into a beam in the ceiling of the garage and passing some clothesline and making handles. So I won't even go there of you going to the hardware store to doing that. So this is the Jewish version of making a pulley for Mark Cantor. You're going to take the belt off your bathrobe, throw it over the top of the closet door, and you're going to now use that as a pulley for just a few minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, five times a day. You cannot look at the success here, Mark Cantor, as I'm going to therapy 3 days a week for an hour for them to work on me. It ain't going to work. You have to marinate your shoulder like that coleslaw of yours. You're going to need to talk to it with range of motion exercises for just a few minutes, but constantly. This is the cooking that you're going to have to do. The pastrami smells good at 10 minutes. It takes 2 hours to cook. You're not cooked yet. Okay? Did I give enough delicatessen Clapper visions for you?
You did, but something you don't know is I do all the refrigeration, plumbing, and electrical for the last 30 years. So I can go to the hardware store.
Okay, good. Make
but
a pulley.
It's frustrating when you're trying to fix something and you don't have the other shoulder. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, no.
So you gotta get it back.
Listen, if it doesn't get better, then you and I need to talk some more. All right, Mark Cantor?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in. Only in Los Angeles can you talk about a deli and the guy who owns it calls. What a great show this is. I'm exhausted already, and I'm hungry. The great Dr. Bob Bulley. Bob, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Robbie, how are you?
Oh, I cannot wait for all of Los Angeles to hear you talk about your life in surgery.
How's the weather out there?
Well, tomorrow I'll be surfing. I'll still wear a wetsuit, but it'll be 90 degrees and just gorgeous. How's it in New York City where you're at?
Well, you should be out here now because there's some 10-foot waves off of Long Island.
Because of the hurricane.
Yeah, the Dorian passed.
But
there's still, you know, rip currents and a lot of waves. So, you know.
When we were together in 1984 in New York City, or 85 when you started, right? You started 85 at Special Surgery.
1985.
Right, I was there 84, 84. We were there the same time. I had a little Honda Civic, a four-door Honda Civic. I got surf racks, and I'd ride my 9'6" surfboard on top of this Honda Civic over the 59th Street Bridge on my way to Long Island or Atlantic Beach. And people would look at me like I was a Martian. Now, I bet you see surfboards in Manhattan all the time.
Yeah, you're tripping over them all the time. You know?
So, Bob Bulley, talk to us. I cannot wait to talk about your Italian connection. Can you imagine I'm comparing you to Dean Martin and Tommy Lasorda? Is this not the greatest?
Dean Martin, a.k.a. Dino Crocetti. And, you know, back then, you didn't want to be Italian. You know, there was, you know, discrimination, and you had to change your name to something that sounded less Italian. But, you know, now everybody wants to be Italian.
Exactly. We're all frustrated Italians, Bob Bulley. But I believe the gift of the Italian culture, the Italian way of thinking is, yes, you get the job done, but you can multitask. You can also be this creative force of nature. You know how to take it easy. It's a beautiful way to be, the way to live your life. Do you sense it?
The lifestyle is fantastic. You know, still, in most of Italy, everything closes down at lunchtime. So banks, businesses, maybe not in Milano, you know, the real cosmopolitan centers, but most of Italy, everything closes down from about noon to two. People go home, they have a nice lunch, they get together with their family. So, you know, they may not be world beaters in the economy and everything else, but they really have a great life, and they know how to live it.
Did you feel it growing up, your mom being full-blown Italian? What was it? Did she speak to it, or she just walked the life and you saw it that way?
Well, my, you know, I went to Italy for the first time at the age of four.
Wow.
And my Italian connection is I'm half Ukrainian, half Italian. My grandparents on my dad's side came over from Ukraine. My grandfather came to Western Pennsylvania to work in the steel plants there. My dad joined the Army in World War II and served in North Africa under Patton, served in Italy, ended up in Vienna at the end of the war. And in 1944, the summer of 44, when Tuscany was liberated from the Germans, there were a lot of celebratory dances going on and parties. So this was July 44, and my dad was looking to get drunk with his buddy. They were on a motorcycle riding through the fields of Tuscany, and they see some lights in the distance and figure that it's a village and they can get something to drink. And they go in, and my mother was there. This was her town with seven of her female cousins.
Wow.
And these two American soldiers walked in uniform, all suntan, and she said it was love at first sight.
Wow.
And instead of getting drunk, my dad found my mom, and it was harder and harder to get together as the front moved north through Italy and then eventually into Austria. But he was always able to get a weapons carrier, one of those big 6x6 trucks, load it up with supplies, drive it back to the village, distribute it. And they still remember him fondly to this day, kind of like the, you know, almost like the savior of the village, because he brought them food and blankets and medicine, whatever he could get from the army, you know, and from the black market.
Wow.
And so they got married there in 1945, came to Pennsylvania. So for my mom, you know, it was a tough transition going from a little village in Tuscany to Western Pennsylvania, not knowing the language, but she did a great job. She raised five boys. We all turned out well, and I've been going to Italy my whole life, and all the relatives on my mom's side are still in Italy.
Take us through a dinner. All right, let's say you're 12 years old. All the brothers are there as well. Take us through a dinner at the Bob Bully house that your mom has prepared.
Well, she would. There would always be plenty of food. It was a combination of Italian things. She made great sauces. She made homemade pasta, but she would also incorporate, you know, some American cuisine, fried chicken, things like that.
Wow.
And you know, with five boys, you had to be quick, you know, or else you'd end up with some fork holes in the back of your hand. But
that's fantastic.
The great thing with my dad, even though he wasn't Ukrainian, even though he wasn't Italian, he learned Italian during the war. And he said if you wanted to meet the chicks, you learned Italian. And because it was difficult for my mom to speak English, she and my dad spoke Italian at the table. Mm. So that we all learned. And to this day, you know, I'm fluent Italian. I have Italian citizenship because you can have dual. So it's just something I'm very happy to have.
So take us through, before we get into hip surgery, take us through the idea of making a dream come true. Here's Tommy Lasorda pitching in Yankee Stadium. Listen to what he says. I want to hear this. Remember, Ranawat taught us, the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know.
Right.
I want you to teach us, my ears don't hear what my mind doesn't know. What does a pure Italian mom, now has a son, hear when you listen to Tommy Lasorda talking about pitching at Yankee Stadium?
They used to dress with shirt and ties, jackets, because they said, once a Yankee, always a Yankee. You're going to play for the Yankees, you got to act like a Yankee. They always wore ties. They always wore sport coats. And they were a traditional. Traditionally, they were the greatest. And here I was actually pitching in Yankee Stadium. And I had dreamt of that. And that's when you say dreams become a reality.
You grow up with this story you just gave us. You become a beautifully successful, one of the best surgeons in the country. And yet, that dream of going back to where your mom came from to get a vineyard and an orchard for olive oil and olives, what's that like to make a dream come true?
Well, you know, I went to Italy several times growing up, and we would spend the whole summer there. So, you know, you just learn to love the country. I mean, there's so much there to love, the food, the churches, everything, just the art. And so my grandfather used to make wine, used to make olive oil. And throughout my whole life, I always thought that if I had the opportunity to have something in Italy, to be able to make wine and olive oil, have a home there, I would love to do it. Mm-hmm. My mother had inherited half of my grandfather's farm over there, but she sold it back in the 1970s. Because back then, as people migrated from the countryside to the cities, a lot of the farms were abandoned, and they were almost given away. And so my mother sold her share, and my brothers and I always regretted that, and we thought, boy, it'd be great to, you know, I thought it'd be great to get something of my own. So I had looked for a number of years till we found the right property, and it's the place we have now is about 6 miles from my mother's hometown. So it's nice to have a lot of my relatives, cousins, and so on in the area. And it's just a lot of fun. You know, as orthopedic surgeons, we work hard. There's a lot of stress. New York is a great town, but is pretty tough. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to be able to recharge your batteries, get away. You know, I'll go over to Italy about every 2 months.
Wow. Good for you. Bob, you're a guy who's changed the world of orthopedics. You're the first person I know of to have actually put stitches in the labrum in the hip joint and repairing it rather than cleaning it up. What is it about you guys that have Italian in your blood that think you can change things? Listen to Tommy Lasorda talking about the very first time baseball players wore helmets, because part of Tommy's technique was to actually throw at the batter's head to intimidate them.
So now we go into Yankee Stadium. Now they're going to start me because of the battle. And that was the first time all of them come at the bat with the helmets on. Hank Bauer was the leadoff hitter. He had a helmet. They put helmets on. They figured if he's going to throw at me, they better wear helmets, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. The creative juices that come from the beautiful work of Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci, and it may seem like hyperbole, but there's something about why not make it a little bit better? And you're at the forefront of preserving someone's hip before they actually need a hip replacement, which you do so beautifully. Teach us about what hip preservation really means.
Well, Robbie, do your listeners know about your sculpting background?
A little bit. You can tell them.
I mean, you're not only a great surgeon, but you have this artistic talent to create, and I've seen the sculpting work that you've done, and it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about the passion for Italy, and you clearly have that. You know, you go on vacations to Carrara, you know, where the marble comes from, and you've learned sculpting, and your lectures on anatomy and how it influenced Michelangelo that you gave at our hospital at alumni meetings is just fantastic. So with hip surgery, too, it's a little bit like sculpting.
Mm-hmm.
Why do hips wear out? They wear out because the anatomy is not right.
Mm-hmm.
So people are either born with a abnormal hip, like hip dysplasia, which is a shallow socket, or they develop hip impingement, where the bones just don't fit together right. So in trying to preserve hips, what we want to do is, it's almost like sculpting, shaving the bone, moving the bone, or recreating it, trying to make it a little bit more anatomically normal so that the hip doesn't wear out at a young age.
And yet, it's so fascinating to me, is your focus is maybe I can help people avoid a hip replacement. But then, if their hip does wear out, you then focus in on the other end. How could I preserve the hip once it's been operated on to make it better? How great is it that you live in both worlds? What is it that attracts you to both sides of the problem?
Well, we know that hip replacement is a great operation. If you talk to anybody who's had a painful, stiff, arthritic hip, it's a life-changing operation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty rapid recovery. The pain goes away. You can resume almost all activities. You know, we have our patients who play almost every sport.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably about a quarter of a million hip replacements done every year in the U.S., and it'll probably climb to about 500,000 a year in a few decades. It's a great operation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're young and you have a hip replacement, there's always the worry that that hip is going to wear out and won't last a lifetime. So the younger the patient is, the more important it is to try to preserve the hip.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, is there a problem that you can fix that will not only relieve their pain and get them back functioning, but will it preserve the hip for a long period of time? Maybe put off a hip replacement forever, or maybe for 10 or 20 years so that they're older once the hip replacement needs to be done.
Bob Bulley, I can talk to you for hours, but before I let you go, you got to teach us, what is it that makes olive oil good versus bad? And what is it about wine in Italy?
Well, olive oil is, you know, it's not only delicious. Ask any cook, they'll tell you how important it is, and it's good for you, it's great for your heart, it's great for your circulation. for olive oil to be good, it has to come from an area where the soil, the climate, the terroir is excellent to produce olives. But olives are fruits, and they have to be picked and pressed right away to preserve freshness and taste. Mm-hmm. And you got to be careful where you get your olive oil. There's a lot of producers that aren't very reputable. Mm-hmm. It's been on 60 Minutes and a lot mm-hmm. of other places in the media. You really have to know where your olive oil comes from, that it's pure and not cut with cheaper, lower-grade oils.
Mm. All right. Well, that's a great information to give us, and I will tell you this. I can't do my own hip surgery, but if I need it, I'm coming to New York, and you're going to be my surgeon. I can't thank you enough, Bob Bulley.
It would be a pleasure, Robbie.
You're like a brother from another mother. To be able to connect that seriousness and focus and talent and creativity and playfulness, we see it in Tommy Lasorda. We saw it in Dean Martin, and you bring that to orthopedic surgery and the way you live your life.
Well, it's
one of the great joys of my life to have you as a friend. Thanks so much.
And we can hear it in your voice, the passion, and the love you have for life and all aspects of it. So keep up the good work.
All right, young man. Thanks so much, and we'll talk soon. That's the great
Robbie.
Dr. Bob Bulley from the Hospital for Special Surgery. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710.
My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning.
Mm-mm. 1983, Amanda, I came to Cedars-Sinai for the first time as an intern. They put me in the ICU and the nurse in the ICU. 20 ICU beds I was in charge of, the 7th and 8th floor. First day out of medical school. Oh, my God, was it scary. She looks at me and she goes, you. I look behind me. No, you. You're on call tonight. I just got here. It's my first day. 20 of the sickest patients in the hospital. You can't be doing this to me. You're on call. What's your name? I said, Clapper. She goes, okay, I got to write it down for the nurses to know to call you. So she takes a pen. She goes to the board. K-L-A-P-P-A-H. Clapper. Is that right? I go, yeah, that's my name. That's the boy from New York City, kitty. I love that song, Steve Paulette. That's great. All right. Let's do some clap revision. Let's go to Lloyd in San Pedro. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hello, doctor.
How are you, Lloyd?
Okay.
Are you 79 years old?
Yep.
When's your birthday?
May 12th.
What are you going to do when you turn 80?
I'm going to celebrate.
How?
Play tennis.
Seriously? Good for you. Hey, Lloyd, what did you do for a living?
Well, I did a lot of things. I was a baseball player and a stockbroker and a frozen yogurt man.
Really?
And I worked in casinos as a pit boss in the poker casinos.
What did your father do for a living?
He painted houses.
How come you didn't paint houses?
I didn't like it, and I wasn't any good at it.
Did your mother work?
Not really. She worked in the home only. She was like his secretary. He was like had a painting business.
Hmm. Did you get along with your father?
Very well.
Really? What's the biggest piece of advice your dad gave you?
Well, he just stayed out of my way. You know, I was a baseball player growing up, and he didn't know that much about it. He came from Sweden, but he became a big fan of baseball, and he just stayed out of my way, and if you want to play, go for it.
Did your mother cook?
Yeah, a lot.
Was she a good cook? Was she a good cook?
Yeah, she was good at what she did. She didn't come up with a lot of varieties, but my dad only wanted meat and potatoes. That's all the guy ever wanted.
So what was the best thing your mother used to make, your favorite dish?
Oh, standing rib roast.
Did it take all day to make this thing?
Well, it took a long time, but she made it kind of rare. And whenever she'd have a party, people come over or whatever, that's what she would have.
Mm.
And it was dynamite.
Where did you grow up?
Chicago, just north of Chicago, Glencoe, Illinois.
Wow. And when did you come to Los Angeles?
Well, I came to L.A. 50 years ago in 69.
Wow. The year the Mets won the World Series.
Yeah, I was in AAA with them, but I couldn't get up to the big leagues. I played with Ryan and Seaver and McGraw and all those guys, but I never made it.
Okay, Philly, you want to ask him a question?
A little dumbfounded right now, honestly.
The biggest mess. So get a load of this, Lloyd. I'm in California, I get a phone call from my mother in Florida, because there's a law, when you grow up in New York, you got to, at 65, you got to move to Florida. So they moved to Florida. I get a call from my mother. She's the only Jewish mother to ever have done this, by the way. It should be in the Guinness World Records. She didn't throw away my baseball cards. She calls me up. She says, "Hey, Robbie, I found a shoebox filled with your old baseball cards. What do you want me to do with them?" I said, "Oh, my God, you're the one mother who didn't throw them away. I have the entire," because you couldn't buy the entire set in those days. Now you could. 1968, I have the whole set of Topps baseball cards. I have Nolan Ryan's rookie card with the Mets.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? That's amazing. And the best thing about this box of baseball cards is in 1968, Topps baseball, I have Mickey Mantle, I have all kinds, but I also have Roberto Clemente. But in 1968, in America, nobody's getting called Roberto. So the baseball card from 1968 that I have of the Pittsburgh Pirates icon says Bob Clemente. And I can tell you, in his entire life, nobody ever called Roberto Clemente Bob Clemente. It was amazing. That's a
people call him Bobby.
Yeah, well, he ain't Bob Clemente. Maybe you can call him whatever you want, but it ain't Bob. It's unbelievable, but that's America, 1968. All right, what'd you do to yourself? How can I help you?
Well, I got my trigger finger was goofed up.
Which finger?
On the left hand, the trigger finger. What would it be, the forefinger?
Okay, your ring finger.
No, the four fingers.
All four of them? No, oh, your trigger. Index finger.
Trigger. When you're firing a gun, you have a trigger finger.
Yeah, well, I'm a Jewish guy. I don't have a gun. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I just watch TV. All right. The trigger finger, your index finger.
Index finger, yes.
Okay. So let me give you a Clapper vision for what a trigger finger is, because people don't really know. So your finger is a lot like a fishing rod, okay? In order to catch the fish, you need the stiffness of the rod, but you also need the fishing line. The tendon is your fishing line. The bones are the stiff fishing rod. What gives you the mechanical advantage to pull the fish in is that the fishing line stays very close to the stiff fiberglass or bamboo rod. How do you hold the line close to the rod? There are these tiny little metal loops that the fishing line goes through, right, for a fishing rod. Well, yes. If you go palms up now and you look at the skin of the palm of your hand and your fingers, right below the skin, where the tendons are, there are, instead of tiny metal loops like you have on the fishing rod, you have structures called pulleys that horizontally go across your finger that hold your tendon close to the bone. A trigger finger is the tendon either gets swollen so it doesn't glide through the pulley very well. It's like the fishing line got fat so it doesn't glide through the hoop, through the circle very well. Or the actual hoop, the pulley gets swollen so the tendon can't glide very well. If there was ever a case where I would allow someone to shoot a cortisone shot, and it should only be done by someone who does hand surgery, not someone like me who does hips and knees and shoulders, but they just do hands, a single one, not two or three, cortisone shot to try to quiet the inflammation may save you from an operation. I'm okay with it. But if they do that and it doesn't work, then you need, under local anesthesia, for them to cut that pulley, and that actually relieves it, and your trigger finger is a thing of the past. That's what you should do with it, okay?
Okay, here's the deal. See, I did that.
Good.
And it worked.
Good.
Like you said. But my question is going to be, will this just temporarily, will it come back?
No, because they quieted down the inflammation. The glide is there. I mean, anything's possible, but I'm saying that 30 years I'm doing this, seeing thousands of people with trigger fingers, you usually see that as solving the problem. Yes.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Thank you very much.
All right, Lloyd, and thanks for listening to the show. You listen every Saturday?
Every other Saturday.
All right, cool. What's your favorite story?
Well, I love the Vin Scully one. Okay, that was good today.
That means at 79, you don't have long-term memory. That's basically what that means, because we just played that. But thank you very much, Lloyd.
That's what I mean.
Listen, enjoy your 80th birthday. And thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Doctor. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. I'm going to give credit to a weekend warrior who actually taught me about where these egg rolls are. And her name is Judy. And the name of the Chinese restaurant is Green Apple. And they are in Studio City. So thank you to Judy. Thank you to the weekend warriors who love the food recommendation, Steve Paulette. Man, is it good. And you get it with what's known as duck sauce, right, Philly? That's
you
what they call it.
It.
It's that. Now here they call it plum sauce. It's like calling a purse. It's a pocketbook. It's not a purse. They call it plum sauce. No, it's duck sauce. And I'm telling you, a Green Apple, this Chinese restaurant, the mustard, be careful. You got to have it with this egg roll. You got to mix the two, the duck sauce and the hot mustard. I can't even speak. My mouth is watering. This gigantic. I put it on Twitter, actually. If you go on my Twitter, at Dr. Robert Clapper, you're going to see a picture of this giant egg roll. But you put the mustard, the duck sauce, and you dip this thing into it. Close your eyes, because you're going to the moon eating this giant New York City egg roll. Let's talk about next week. Next week, my guest is going to be the comedian Jeff Garland from Curb Your Enthusiasm and the Goldbergs. And what fascinates me about him, we already did a whole thing about comedy and art and sports and in surgery, but he always is involved with a family. And I have a soundbite of Michael Jordan when they asked him, why are you crying after getting the MVP trophy? It has something to do with Chicago and being in a family. Can't wait. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio, and I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. Have a good week.